Welcome to Let's Talk About Gay Stuff. Woo-hoo! We're the podcast where we talk about gay stuff and discuss LGBTQ plus history. Wee! I am Thomas.
Chris.
Sissy.
And this week we're going to talk to you about some gay stuff.
Oh my gosh.
We're going to talk to you about Billie Eilish.
Ooh.
And we're going to talk to you about some scandals in the Catholic Church because, you know.
Well, you know.
Why not? Before we do that, just a reminder, if you're listening to us, don't forget to subscribe to us so you can hear future episodes. You can visit our website at letstalkaboutgaystuff.com, follow us on Facebook and Instagram at Let's Talk About Gay Stuff, and on Twitter at Talk Gay Stuff. Leave us a review, tell us what you think. We've got some listeners and I think it's like Papua New Guinea, so what up to Papua New Guinea? I only know this because we're getting the chart updates, and they're like, hey, you know, you're ranked 25 or 117. So, hey, thanks for listening, PNG.
Do you hear that?
Yes.
Okay.
It's the music that no one else can hear.
Okay.
Yeah, we're having some feedback, but I don't think the audience
like,
can hear.
Like cartoons?
The audience
can hear. Like, oh, you're thinking about the cartoons?
Maybe you're having some of what we give our dogs, you know, them CBD treats. If you have pups, doggies, or fur babies, we'll show them some love with some Baked Bones dog treats. These aren't just any treats. These are specially baked bones. They have CBD, which is great because CBD has been shown to help reduce stress and anxiety in both humans and dogs. Thankfully, Baked Bones has your dog covered with delicious treats that your dog will surely love. Made from organic, human-grade ingredients and full-spectrum hemp oil, their bones may offer some relief to your anxious pup. You can check out BakedBones.com for more information on CBD for dogs and the other benefits it may provide. Baked Bones offers free shipping on all orders over $25, and you can save 15% using promo code GAYSTUFF15. That's right, GAYSTUFF15. Baked Bones is LGBTQ plus owned and operated and is in based in Houston, Texas. Baked Bones proudly donates 10% of all of its profits to no-kill shelters in the U.S. Baked Bones, baked dogs, happy. Meow. Woof. What's going on? It's been a hot minute since we've recorded. How are you guys doing? What's been going on in your life? We're coming off. So we're recording, we're leaning into April 7th through 13th. We're just coming off Easter. We're looking forward to hopefully surviving the eclipse. Tell me, what's happening in your world, ladies?
I hope I survive. I live too far away from home, from work, to have to walk.
Figure out the apocalypse, yeah.
Easter, let's go. Let's go and rewind. How did you spend your Easter? I have kids, so I did kids stuff. We did Easter Bunny. We had a kid's birthday party, breakfast in the morning. That's, you know, an Easter egg hunt. That's all I got.
Well, I'm a single gay man.
Well,
so
tell
I
us.
Spent the weekend being an absolute slut.
Because Easter tends to be an event for the gays because, you know, it's not like we're going home a lot of, not so much the the religious gays, the slutty gays. You know, the weather's starting to be nice. And look, I had participated in plenty of that. Yeah, it's the world, especially in Houston. The weather's nice. There's an annual event called Bunnies on the Bayou, which raises money to give to local.
Lots of money. Not just like a little bit of money, like lots
of
money.
Tens of thousands of dollars.
Millions of dollars.
Well, not per year, but in total.
No. Okay.
But yeah, lots of money for local LGBTQ plus organizations, and they make lot to your point, doing lots of good, while also providing lots of fun for the gays.
Entertainment.
So tell us about your little experience. It's been a long time since I went. When I went, I was with Spence, so I was coupled up. Not that means anything in gay world because
no,
you know how many couples did you make out with, Chris?
I think three.
Three couples,
yeah,
or three people in a couple.
Like I made out with someone, and then I was like, "Oh, there's my husband. You gonna meet him?" I was like, "Okay." And then I made out with his husband. I'm like, oh, okay.
So
cool.
Three of those sets, or three people in one?
I think three people in one, but also like a set. So,
and no wonder you've got a sore throat.
Yeah. Oopsies.
Anywho's, what is this event? What happens there?
It's just a great old time. People wake up late from the night prior because there's also events going on all weekend long. And you go out to the park, Sesquicentennial Park in Houston, and it is down by the bayou, and you come out in your the most outrageous of of costumes. Easter wear, yes.
Easter vest.
Which actually, you can either wear like one of those big
hats
or like you just dress like a slut. And so I showed up in a shirt with holes in it and a harness and a short shorts.
Mesh,
yeah. No, but they were like big holes.
It was Sunday. It was a holy shirt.
Oh.
Yes.
There's your dad joke for today.
Yeah. So.
He did not like that. The whippersnapper.
Park for
no dad jokes.
5 hours in the sun.
He only likes daddy jokes.
Talk and drink.
And you hang out with the gays and make out
with
people.
What's there
to
do?
Drink.
I said, what if I don't want to go and make out with a bunch of strangers? What do I do?
Then you can stand around and drink.
It's not your show, then.
And talk to your friends.
I think I'm that cool.
Well, you don't have to make out with people. If you don't want to make out with people, don't make out.
I don't think I'm cool enough to go to that.
Okay, then don't go.
But it always looks like fun.
It's a lot of fun.
I will say a couple of things. When I went a few years ago, there was no, like, the place that you talked about, the park I've seen since the one I've been to, there's more shade there, because the one I went, it was at a different location.
Oh, yes. That was...
And it was just, it was called it Fry Fest or Bake Fest, because
oh, yeah.
there was no shade, and it was a nice day, like temp-wise, but to be out in the sun, it was just like you were just baking.
It was that square up by Eleanor Tinsley,
yeah.
that was like raised up. It wasn't in Eleanor Tinsley, but there's like a big square that's over by the like the bathrooms by the bridge on Sabine.
Yes.
And yes, I do remember that it was there, and I remember it was miserable because there was no shade.
No
trees.
I mean, there was lots of shade being thrown, but
maybe. And I remember everyone hiding in like the giant Bud Light tent.
Yes.
And they were like, "Guys, get out of the way!
Yeah.
Like, we don't want to be out in the sun.
It's like we're baked roasting."
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So
that was rough.
So that's one thing. But like again, Easter celebrations, I think amongst the LGBTQ community, maybe in the South, is common because the weather's nicer. I think Kendall used to talk about old former host, friend of our show, a co-founder of the show, talk about the tea parties that they'd have in New Orleans,
mm-hmm.
and so the gays would have a tea party on Sundays, particularly Easter Sunday, and it was big to do.
Mm-hmm,
so
mm-hmm.
we love a reason to celebrate.
Oh, absolutely.
But the other thing I was going to say is the pictures I saw initially, maybe I was looking at the social media early in the day. People were clothed, and I remember remarking to my...
It did not look as extravagant as years past.
Early people are typically wearing their clothes.
Their buttoned-up shirts. Yeah.
Then they're no longer wearing those
shirtless
clothes.
Harness, like... Yeah. The speedos and thongs are being, some gay people.
Gay people. So that's how I spent my weekend.
Well,
it
good.
Was a grand gay old time. Had to take Monday off to recover from all of the things that I ingested. So, you know what I mean?
Oh!
That's why he has, he's drinking out of John Sippy Cap.
The throat. No, I'm just kidding.
Oh, goodness.
I'm just kidding.
We had one gay place.
Yes.
You can get there's different kinds? Or it's the same place in a different place? Or same thing in a different place?
Same thing in a different place. But it doesn't, it's not like it enters down here and then ends up up here.
Well, I didn't know if it was like a different strain or something. It's just where you
yeah,
get it.
Well, you just call his mouth Little Shop of Horrors, am I right?
Oh.
Little Shop of Horrors, you know what I'm saying?
There we go. There we go.
I love him.
There we go.
Okay.
Your friend Jinx Monsoon's in that, huh?
I know.
Not your
she
friend.
Will be playing, I'm not sure what pronouns to use. I was just looking, so I'm not.
Jinx is.
I'm gonna say
they them.
But I see she now too. Anywho, but yes, she's going to be. They're going to be Audrey. Yes.
So Jinx has played two iconic. So
yep.
Jinx is a drag queen.
Mm-hmm.
Won twice on RuPaul's Drag Race season five.
Twice,
all stars.
One of my favorites.
She's all winners. Dude,
all winners. And so, great, hilarious
uh-huh.
drag queen. A little quirky from Seattle. Now from the world.
Yes.
And. She was in Chicago, right?
Yes, she was in Chicago, played the warden, I forget the name.
Warden.
A woman, the
yes,
part of a woman,
yes.
yes.
And it was a big deal because she was the first drag queen or first, drag performance for that. So
yeah.
That was pretty awesome.
Which, she was in her season five, so many years ago, probably 10 years ago?
Mm, yeah, 10, 11 years ago.
There was a clip of her saying, I would just love to be in Chicago playing the part that she ultimately came to play,
mm-hmm.
which is kind of nice.
She
did that. You put it out in the universe.
And now she's Audrey, and also in Doctor Who coming up. I'm not sure. I'm not a doctor.
Not a doctor. Me either.
Chris, what are you putting out in the universe? What are you manifesting?
I'm manifesting positive mental health.
All right.
I'm manifesting not being hated.
Okay.
And I'm manifesting more gay stuff in my life.
Oh, okay.
You were a little bit worried about where that S was going, weren't you?
Well, you started saying the sad. I was like, census?
Me?
Census? Speaking of gay stuff, if you squint, jump up and down, and twirl, you can see that Pride is close. We're in April, so sniffing it. It's in June. You can smell the sweat.
I'm planning my Pride event at the gym. So
well, I'll
here.
Tell you what. You can also plan to be at the Pride and Business Celebration that the Greater Houston LGBT Chamber of Commerce is hosting. It's their 8th annual Pride and Business Celebration, and this provides a unique opportunity to celebrate the important role of LGBTQ plus and allied businesses in the Greater Houston economy. The event underscores how the LGBTQ plus and allied business community works with the broader business community to realize a better city and region. It's on Friday, June the 7th, 2024, and you can find out more at HoustonLGBTChamber.com/2024PIB. Again, that's HoustonLGBTChamber.com/2024PIB. Of course, we are once again for the third year in a row media partners. You'll see our logo and some of the promotions related to this event. So we'll put that out there in full disclosure. But it's always a wonderful event. Last year, there were over 500 people that have attended the event. And so they think there will be more. We'll have media personalities. We'll have local officials, you know, government people in business swirling and doing their thing. So it'll be a gay old time, right? How I say, if you let me, gay old time.
Gay old times.
Speaking of gay old times, JoJo Siwa, you following her? She's coming out with some music.
She's got this new music coming out. And
she said she wants to have her bangers moment, a la Miley Cyrus.
Miley is giving that the clips, I think, but also she
eclipse.
A total eclipse of the heart.
That
one,
that's where I was going.
I'm gonna have to play that all day. It is. I got stuck on JoJo Siwa talk the other day, so I'm not totally an expert, but I'm on my way there. And she's
not to be a big deal or anything.
And it's like she keeps, but she's very much hyping up this song Karma, and I listened to a little bit. It's not horrible. It's not horrible. It's a little funny because she's like, I used to be a badass. Well, you know, with the rainbows and the hair bows, I guess. But a lot of people are guess. I think I don't know. I don't think people are going to take it very seriously. I don't think it's going to be as
bangerish as was it bangers? That was the album Wrecking Ball and We Can't Stop. Yeah,
those two of them. That's.
Mm-hmm. It was such a good, like, We Can't Stop. I remember watching it the first time. I'm like, this is ridiculous. And then I watched it. Now I love it. Every time
it's excellent.
Me and a friend of the show, Martha, would watch it and we'd sing it. And, you know, maybe we had a few drinks.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe we played it on the jukebox.
I was back when I was in college. I would probably like it.
Yeah.
I think it's just, I don't know. I feel she's trying to be current.
But she's she's putting her sexuality out there. She's kissing some girls. She's declared that she's a lesbian.
Which we talked about on the show whenever I talked about it.
She's
a whippersnapper.
She looks very unique in her black bag. I think she is. I can see her, see it as a ploy to get to grow up because she's got to be what?
Hey, but if she comes around like we'll say Lady Gaga and Miley, be strong performers and I will applaud that and then to make herself.
I see her on a season of Dancing.
She's already done Dancing with
Stars. Maybe that's why I saw it.
Probably.
Maybe you have seen it. Maybe
you,
it was season 27.
I will listen to it. It's probably going to be a bop, from what I've heard. But I think it's. I don't think it's going to be like. It's no Beyonce.
But you said she was unique, like Beyonce.
Yeah, I would say Beyonce also dropped her own album with Cowboy Carter.
I was up listening to it on
I with two eyes.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, with the twos. What are you thinking about Cowboy Carter from Beyonce Carter Knowles?
It was great. I woke up. I was looking forward to it. That was Saturday? It was Saturday.
Like she came. It was released on Friday at midnight.
Oh,
so
you know why?
It was Thursday at 11.
At school. That's why it threw me off.
Oh, it was a good Friday.
I had to take a break from my prepping for Madonna.
Prepping?
And yes. And I listened to it. Luckily, Ben was very nice. He was cooking breakfast. I was listening to the whole album, making him listen to it, repeat, and giving him feedback. So it was very good. I like it. This is going to be her. I actually remember this. I think I might have said it to you. I also posted it on Instagram. This is going to be her album of the year.
You know,
Jay-Z is finally going to get
it. In the group chat.
Oh. See, I know I said it. Hey, look, I have to remember these
Why do you think that?
Because I think this is finally showing, like, everybody thought, oh, it's going to be a country album.
And it's not.
And it's
really,
not.
Yeah.
I mean, she's doing, I think it's different enough, because, like, when she did the Renaissance, it was like, okay, it was still dance, it was still pop, it was disco, so it was still kind of Beyonce-ish, like,
mm-hmm.
you could relate it to all that. She still, you know, was doing her whole, you know, like, reclaiming and things and honoring, you know, black past and the history of all that. But I think this is more like a delve into her, like, her expertise where she does, like, you know, like Lemonade, where she really has a vision and has
mm-hmm.
a, and goes full on into something. And you can tell she just gets in this and gets it done. Because she has some people I've never heard of on there,
mm-hmm.
like, oh shit, I forgot her name already.
Linda?
Yes.
Linda Martell?
The people that probably I've never heard of her. So, I mean, like, how many people know of her, you know? And so I think that it's showcasing how she is able to just kind of create out of nothing. I mean, plus, I'm like, look, she's got this entire thing. Like, think of all the hype.
Yeah, I was overanalyzing it a bit, and I was like, I think it's a great album. Yeah, imagine that. But I was like, is it a uniquely artistic album? I think it is, because go ahead.
See, when I was not as impressed with Lemonade as the rest of the world was. Like, I saw the vision she had, but to me, I think the thing that was more the visual, the fact that everything had a video, there was all that. I think that was the gimmick for that.
But she did the album before,
yeah.
Beyonce.
But this, I think, is where she's, like, shows, like, that she's just, like, she's creative. She's
mm-hmm.
building, like, an entire, like, story. Like, there's all these things. It's her, but it's honoring all. I mean, this is where it all ties together,
yeah.
I feel like. So she's still her. She's still doing her roots. There's still ties to Houston in there. There's still ties to Pop in there and her family. But it's still, like, she has created just, like, this whole other level. So I think this is, for me, I'm not a huge Beyonce fan. I like her. I listen to everything. But this was
good. It's a good album. I like it. I think it is one of her more artistic albums. My favorite album of hers from artistic and, like, doing something new was the Beyonce album
mm-hmm.
that she released in 2013. Dropped it without telling anyone.
Yes.
I think it was a good story about her personally, and it wasn't, like, so in your face. It was just like, I'm going to tell you about my early chapter, right, and how I got to be Beyonce. And I thought it was just a good, well-made album. It had ballads, it had, you know, and it was a different sound for her to some extent. Still kind of Beyonce, but just a different flavor. Lemonade, to your point, I was not as enamored by it. It was a good.
Those two had, like, the gimmicks, like the video, the you know, just sudden thing. And this was, like, being hyped. So this, I think, it was like those walks so this could run. Like, this was her, you know, this geared up for her, like, it was going to be big no matter what, but this was, like, it's exceeding, I think, what people were expecting.
And I can't figure out, like, you know, because you always like album one, although her first album, solo album, was well produced.
Yeah.
She had all the right backing. This one, at the same time, like, I can't figure out, do I like this album? Genius is a strong word, but, like, she came up with this concept, because it's a very unique take on it, but it's like, but also she has all these, like, the world's best producers and songwriters to help collaborate that. But do you admire that fact that she was able to piece all these together
I
and her
so,
team?
Because I think I was looking at it and reading through the lyrics, I think it's also a good showcase of how you sample and bring people on in a new way.
Yeah.
Like, because, like, she, for example, like Jolene, everybody thought, oh, she's just going to redo it like what Whitney Houston did. but it's not at all. It's completely reimagined. It's almost like 98% rewritten.
It's chapter two to the first song, right?
Exactly.
It's not, because I like, it's not a cover.
No,
it is chapter two. It's like it's the hidden verse to,
exactly,
to something.
Exactly.
It's like
part two. But I looked in that. It's still contributing. She does not take credit for writing on this.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I couldn't find out if Dolly wrote the whole thing. I saw that she, was involved. But like I looked at, like, she's not, Beyonce's not credited as being the author of that. So I think if you look at all those things, I think this is a good way of showing how you sample and use things without just, I want this hook. I want this catch. But this is doing, like, I'm going to honor this and this part of it.
Yeah. I love the fact, though, that this is the second album. She's got people gooped and gagged, to use the gay, the gay terms. And, she's already done some amazing things career-wise, like, in terms of, like, hitting the mark, like, Crazy in Love and, You Must Not Know About Me, like, to, Single Ladies, like, iconic songs.
Those were, I think, what people expected from her.
Sure. But then she had, like, dropped a Beyonce album, like, surprised everyone, like, a very unique career move. And then Lemonade was very much it was, if anything, it was a raw album because she was talking about her, like, the infidelity in her marriage. And then she dropped this iconic, like, so my point is, all those things happened. They were great. And then, for the young gay in the house, you get to be like, oh, I'm in my 30s. I'm so old. She did amazing things. And then she's turned 40. She's dropped two, I think, pretty remarkable albums for her career.
This is about history. Like, this is about music in general and her. This is her art pop.
Life keeps happening. Don't let it stop.
Well, when you get to be, when you're that kind of creative person, and you get to be a certain level of fame, and you have the clout and the money and the backing, you can do things like this, like art pop. And it may or may not be received the way you want it.
What will she do, though, when she's Madonna's age? So you saw Madonna.
Oh, I don't think she... I think
how,
I did. And it
how
was
Madonna's concert?
It was beyond amazing.
Had you seen her before?
I'd never seen her before.
She puts on a good show.
And I will say, we talked about her being late. I was expecting... late. She went on at 10:30.
That's late. When it's ticket time is 8 o'clock.
A lot of concerts. But okay, so there was a DJ was the first. So like it started, doors opened at 8:30. We got there at like 8:45. We walked around. I bought my souvenirs. I looked at all the cool people.
You paid $90 for a t-shirt?
It was only
60?
50. But
yeah, that's going right.
It wasn't the $250 one I wanted. I couldn't see that. And so, and then I bought Ben a hat and I bought a keychain. It's only like 80 something bucks for all that. Maybe 100 bucks. And then so the DJ was on from about like 8:30-ish to about 9:30. I was like, okay. And I don't know, she's following a lot. I followed her on Instagram. It was very good. She was doing a great job. Some Madonna stuff, some not. And then it was from about 9:30, 9:40. We thought, oh, she'll be on at like 10. But no, it was so. But like, there was still music, and then I heard that like she has Bob the Drag Queen is like an opening act, which it's not at all an opening act. It's like an introduction, and then he makes several appearances throughout the show. But for 65 years old, it was amazing.
Yeah,
you could tell she did all the singing. There were times where she was breathless. That was, you don't know. Hopefully, somebody. Sphere got that.
Very good.
Hint. Thank you. There were some times she paused. She did not do a ton of the dancing from like 40 years ago.
Yeah.
You could tell like the backup, you could tell there's a reason why there were like 50 other people on the stage. She did the stuff, but it was amazing.
Yeah.
And there was the whole part where she did the AIDS thing and it was very emotional. I cried. And she did a thing about Michael Jackson and I cried a little bit there too, but not much because of
And then the thing about Britney Spears when she died. I'm just kidding.
Nobody died.
Perish. Nobody died.
It
was amazing. She went on until like 10:30 till about almost 1.
10:45.
No, 1 o'clock. So, for 65 years old, for 3 hours, That's, I mean, a lot. I don't know. I don't go to a lot of concerts, but I was exhausted. And I was just sitting. No, I was staying there. I didn't sit down. I sang the entire time. Ben and I talked about the gay couple in front of us. At first, we thought they were boyfriends. And then I was not so sure if it was a first date. And then I think the one guy was just not having it.
He didn't want to be at the Madonna concert.
Yeah, but they knew each other somehow. The other guy, we were just listening to all his stories about how when he was 15, he did acid. He was feeling himself the entire night. It was entertainment.
It's just a good show. Just because of good music alone.
She did a great job.
Well, you think Beyonce will be doing that?
No, I don't. I really do think that conspiracy theory that after this next third round, she's going to take a break. I don't know if it's after that, but I could see her taking it like a longer term hiatus, like a Rihanna type of situation where she's involved in something, but she's not touring or making music.
Yeah.
And then she will do some kind of like comeback or residency.
She's not young. I mean, she's not old, but she's not a 20-something. She's got three kids.
None of them are teenagers.
Yeah.
So, I mean.
So it makes sense that she take this moment in life. But at the same time, she could be like, whatever, I can afford to bring my kids wherever
exactly.
I want, get them schooled. So
I'm just waiting for what the next third one's going
to
be.
It'll be interesting, though, just to see how she evolves over the next, like, 10 years. And then what does she do? Does she pull a Madonna and a J-Lo who's like, I'm still the leading lady? Or does she accept her role?
Her
like,
fate.
Oh, I don't even want... That's not... That sounds misogynist and ageist, but... Miley has taken a different route. Kylie Minogue, who's like, hey,
yes.
I'm having a good time. I didn't expect, I'm going to put out some music. I'm not going to try to do flips for you.
It shocks the hell out of me, too.
I'm not going to whip my hair. Like, I'm going to take everything, like,
I feel like Beyonce, I think, though, this is kind of going that route. This is not a big, this is not a big dancey album like Renaissance. This is not a big, like, you know... pop. I feel like this is a little bit more because you have to listen. It's an experience. Opera in it, that one song.
Mm-hmm. And your thoughts on Cowboy Carter, Chris?
It was good. That's it. Love Pink.
No notes.
That's it. I don't know that I vocalized this, and I'll probably get us canceled from the Beehive. I haven't been a Beyonce. Okay, no, I like Beyonce. I have not been a person who will actually seek out listening to Beyonce since Beyonce in, 2013?
Mm-hmm.
Lemonade, EXO.
None of that.
It's lost on me.
Yep.
All of it was just like, okay, she's good at what she does.
Yep.
And like when I watched Homecoming, I was like, yeah, she's doing great. Look at her. Okay. I'm just not like a, like, yeah. Wearing bitch. Like, I'm just like, okay, she's obviously good at what she does, and clearly people like what she puts out. It's just not for me. Kind of like Kylie Minogue. Gays are obsessed with her, too. You just mentioned her. I don't like any of her stuff. But see, Beyonce's stuff sometimes. I basically don't like any of Kylie's stuff. Besides the Padam Padam song that came out, that was just the vibe. It was terrible, but I loved it. But Beyonce, like I said, I'm not just actively seeking out, like, wow, I'm in a Beyonce mood right now. I listened to the entire album. It was very good.
Yeah, it was an experience.
Yeah, it was an experience.
It will not be showing up on your Spotify.
No, it will not be on my Spotify Wrapped.
Wrapped, that's what it's called.
No.
Because you're waiting for the Katy Perry album?
Dua Lipa, actually.
Dua Lipa
comes out this month. Thank you.
The Taylor Swift album?
No, absolutely not.
See,
I have not listened to Taylor Swift in many, many albums as well.
But it sounds like, you know, that maybe the divas are doing a bit of downshift, and Kacey Musgraves, who also released an album recently.
I did enjoy that one.
She did say, she said, you know, this isn't going to be the poppers driven album that the gays want, but
so
she said this will be a nice, you know, sit, take a deep breath, gaze. Like, it was, she called us out, and she said, you don't need hyper pop all the time, my words.
And
she was like, just take a break. Everything doesn't have to be a party. Sometimes you just need to sit on the sideline and, you know, find a deeper well.
And you know it is. That song is good.
I listened to that album. I also liked it, but once again, I guess I was seeking out the hyper pop.
Yeah, you're like, I need the energy.
I need girls.
See, no, but see,
sometimes
I like the opposite of of her, of Casey Musgraves. I almost said cousin. I like her, the way she puts, like, the album together and, like, the layout of it.
Oh, it's a very good
storytelling. I like the how she does that. I like that.
Yeah, she's very much a poet, like, that sort of, versus,
really
like, some, like Beyonce and Gaga, I feel like they're putting these, like, queen type of, like, masterpieces together, and I say masterpieces, like, you interpret that the way you want, but
it is, yeah.
They're trying to do that. Same thing with Madonna to a certain extent. Casey's, like, writing, you're getting pieces from her journal, and they're all forming one complete story. Maybe?
Well, and I think... Well, like you said, they're all like, I mean, maybe we're past like just like pointless bubblegummy pop. I think about it, even what's her face, even Miley Cyrus, who just won, I mean, this latest is more.
It's just that those ladies are getting to a different stage in their life.
Yeah, but then who were the next little one? I mean,
there are not any
big ones that are not.
You know who is?
Who?
Billie Eilish.
Oh my god.
Oh my god. Okay.
Two-time Academy Award winner.
Mm-hmm.
Billie Eilish.
Bailey Eilish. yeah. So let's just
get into Billie Eilish.
I'm kind of excited to talk about Billie Eilish.
That always like is going to get the audience very excited.
He's really enthusiastic about this.
Because I have some feelings about her. But then again, it could just be, you know, my inability to prevent my body from aging. And, you know, not understanding the youth that drives me to a point that I'm like, what is going on? Anyway, so let's go ahead and
let's dive into this.
We'll delve, if you will. So Billie Eilish was born as Billie Eilish Pirate Beard O'Connell.
Is that a real entry?
Yes, that is her real name.
I want a pirate's name.
Yeah, it's Dusty Butt Pirate.
She was born on December 18th of 2001 in Los Angeles, California.
That'll be your married name.
There you go. Put it together.
you'll both be Dusty and Ben, but pirates.
Mm-hmm. She was raised in a very creative environment with her parents, Maggie Beard and Patrick O'Connell, who were both musicians and actors in Los Angeles, California.
That all makes sense.
Since a very young age, she was always very interested in talent and had a talent in music. So she was interested in and had a talent in music. And she even started writing and performing songs at a young age. So she was drawing a lot of inspiration from a very large, diverse, cacophony, if you will, of influences. So
it's SATs.
I'm trying,
wow.
Right? So as she, of course, began to get older, she created her own, began to develop her own unique sound and blending a lot of elements of pop, electronic, and alternative music. So then she released her EP, Don't Smile at Me, in 2017, showcasing her distinctive style and like her very unique kind of the way that she gave off her lyrics or her lyricism. Very, very introspective. So
at a young age.
At a very young age. Very, like 15, 16? Didn't give me a year. But, she was 17. Yeah, 16.
Come on, ChatGPT.
Look at it. so she kind of at a young age was also very defiant, if you will, against the norms of being a young pop star, if you will. She embraced her own her strong individuality and this idea of like non-conforming. Like my music is going to be different, and that's just what it is. Like I'm not going to, you know, bend over backwards for whatever label wants me to do whatever. So she refused to adhere to traditional beauty standards, and that apparently really clung to the LGBTQ plus fan base because of her authenticity specifically. So a lot of gays were like, yes, bitch, work, fight the man, do what you need to do. So that's where she drew a lot of her fan base with the gays.
This is how I knew I was like aged out of like music though, because I thought I was like, oh, I still listen to music, but I was listening to Beyonce and like Katy Perry, and there are bops, right? Mm-hmm. Miley Cyrus, but then this little Billy Irish. I was gonna say Cyrus. Billy Eilish comes out, and didn't know anything about her, but here I date this man who's 12 years younger than I am, and he's listening to this this little, and I'm like, what is this? And it's like very swoony, moany, and I was like, oh, is this Lana Del Rey? That's what I
Lana Del Rey.
And then I started listening more, and I was like, I got hooked. Mm-hmm. I think she's got something, and the same thing with Kacey Musgraves. And not everyone, people don't like this about them. I mean, the complaints are there.
That whispery, melancholy, like very ethereal
But it's not Lana Del Rey, which my husband says, he stole the term, right? She sings in cursive.
That's funny.
Oh my God, she does.
And so, but so I don't put Kacey and Billy in the same bucket, but they're adjacent, you know, in the spectrum.
Yes.
Chris is saying they're in the same bucket.
No, they're definitely more on that end.
I disagree.
You think they're all in the same bucket?
I like Kacey Musgraves' music.
Yeah.
And I do not like Billy Eilish's music.
But I started to get hooked. I wasn't all in initially, and then there was one song that she produced, a version of it that she sang. With Alicia Keys, and I'm like hypnotized. I will watch it 1,000 times over.
Mm.
It's Ocean Eyes. Okay.
Well, let's talk about her rise to stardom. She released her debut album, When We All Fall Asleep, Where Do We Go? In 2019, receiving widespread critical acclaim. She made history by becoming the youngest person ever to win the four main Grammy categories in a single year. So people loved her. She was out here at 18, out doing the absolute most. You know, of course, she was wearing baggy sweatshirts and dyeing her hair green and cutting it at weird angles and doing all sorts of different things. And so, once again, she continued her nonconformity for a very long time.
And she wore a wig. Like, I think she did it initially, and then she had to get a wig to keep it up. That look.
No, but
that's what I heard her say. I don't know if she was pulling everyone's leg when she said it, she was wearing a wig, but because she needed to keep the Billie Eilish look up, she was wearing a wig with the black and the green roots.
Yeah. So, of course, she always faced criticism and backlash for her unconventional fashion choices and, of course, her outspoken personality. She, in interviews, oftentimes, you know, would say whatever came to her mind instead of, you know, a typical rehearsed actor or, you know, star. Where it's like, you need to answer this question exactly like this for your image and blah, blah, blah. And she didn't seem to have any of that. She essentially was like, I'm going to answer it however the fuck I want to. And if people like it. If they don't, then they don't get the real Billie Eilish, you know? So
she would stop some of her performances just because, again, I'm a little obsessed. Not obsessed, I'm a fan. But she would stop some of her voices and like, y'all, it's too early in the morning for me to be singing this song. Like, and then she would start over again, or she would like hit a note. She's like, I don't like it that way. So she would sing it again.
Start over.
Yeah.
Yeah. I forgot to say, how did I miss that? Wow, I miss a lot.
What was the punchline?
Well, so she gained a lot of widespread attention in 2015, so around 14 or 15 years old, with the release of her debut single, Ocean Eyes, which was written by her, 2015.
A decade.
By her Almost. Brother, Phineas O'Connell. So Phineas and Billy got viral online when she was just 14.
I bet people called her Ferb.
Maybe.
Okay, go on.
Anyway, so that's where she really got her start. I don't know how I missed that spot. I apologize for having to go backwards. Anyway, so conflict and drama. Speaking of those fashion choices, those unconventional fashion choices, she also found herself in a bit of hot water when I think it was on Vogue or one of those magazines or whatever that she suddenly was very no longer covered. And so her breasts were, you know, pushed up and pushed out.
Yeah.
She was wearing like a very lacy, like dainty, womanly thing.
But she didn't do that until she was like 21. Not that dynamic, but because I'd say that, like, we've talked about Britney Spears, where they put her on the cover of like Rolling Stone, like at 18.
Mm-hmm.
And she, Billie Eilish resisted that because I think she's kind of if I remember correctly. Busty. A little busty, yeah. Mm-hmm. And so she didn't want that to be like a central part of who she was. She didn't want people talking about her body. She was like, I'm putting music out there, like, and I'm a musician, I'm an artist, like, I want you to hear my music, not be saying, why is she wearing that? And she's like, if you're going to complain about me wearing baggy clothes, fine. Rather than you saying, oh, wow, she's gained weight, or her boobs are this, you know, it's just like, talk about that. So.
Yeah. So that's why, because that, for a very long time, that was the image that she put out, was like, I don't want people to objectify me and whatnot. And then suddenly, out of nowhere, she was on a cover where she was allowed to be objectified, right? Which, you know, she essentially claimed as like, it was my choice to make. You know, I got to decide this.
Are you going to read people for putting out thirst traps?
I'm not reading her. I'm saying that some people were.
I'm just wondering. Like,
okay. That's check, how we're going today.
You
can today.
Check out that Instagram. And, what's the Instagram handle? Get the anyway. Fans, honey. Get them.
Get the fan. At underscore Chris does stuff. Thank
there you go.
Go. Like and subscribe. I post there's traps. Find me on Instagram, honey. Anyways. So there were, yeah, also dank ass memes.
I give you credit for that. That is, you know, your memes are good.
I only post memes that make me go, and then I post them.
I mean, I could do without the thirst traps, but
okay,
just
calm down. I know that they're not everyone's cup of tea, but they are some people's cup of tea.
Which, you know, you have found your tribe, and that's good.
I don't like the shade in that.
What?
I don't like the shade in that. I don't like the shade in that. I don't like those. Okay, we're going to move on. So there's also...
All of a sudden, he said, give me a glass. I'm pouring that. I don't need the glass. There goes the cork.
Yeah. Go. Anyway, so there's been some controversy also surrounding her song lyrics and even her music videos, as some of the critics are like, don't we think that she's a little young for talking about some of these things? Like, some of these songs coming out when she was 14, 15, 16, 17, it's like, it's a bit provocative and kind of a bit dark. Like, so that's where a little bit of controversy comes from. She's also been very active in confronting cyberbullying and online harassment, particularly on social media platforms, but she continues to remain resilient in the face of adversity. So, you know, Gen Z is growing up in a largely online world. Luckily, I got out of high school just before everyone had smartphones in their pocket and didn't have to deal with that as much. But I can only imagine what these kids go through nowadays, where you take a picture and suddenly everyone has it. And so it just, yeah. So she's apparently handled that with a lot of grace and poise, if you will, or, you know, just calling the shit out. And then she's also experienced tensions with paparazzi and invasive media coverage, leading to occasional confrontations and privacy violations. So she apparently does not like paparazzi.
Write a song about it.
Yeah, exactly. So why are we talking about her?
I don't know.
She is openly sexually fluid. She's been very open about that. And she identifies as bisexual and encouraging open dialogue about LGBTQ+ issues. She has actively used her platform to amplify the voices of queer artists and activists, promoting inclusivity and acceptance. She's participated in all sorts of LGBTQ+ events, fundraisers, pride celebrations, charity concerts, and collaborated with LGBTQ+ artists and creatives, demonstrating solidarity with a community through her work and partnerships.
I feel like it's interesting because, like, maybe because the times have evolved, and you think about, like, with Britney and Christina were coming up, it was very like, who's your boyfriend and what are you dating? You know, you shouldn't be dressing like that. And so Billie Eilish came up in the time of Me Too, and so we weren't you know, asking questions like that anymore because we've learned from it. But I don't remember her getting asked a lot of questions like, are you dating anyone? So it never really came up. And then, like, I only saw it recently. Like, there was an interview clip that I was watching, and they're like, she said something about women, and the interviewer was like, oh, you like women? She's like, well, was that not obvious? Like, I didn't feel like I had to come out about it. And so so I thought that was interesting. She wasn't one that feel like, oh, I need to have a big coming out.
Mm-hmm. No big to do about it. Like, oh, all right. Yeah.
But because, so, I mean, it aligns though with your point. Like, she never, she's always embraced, like, you know, being open.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if she ever said specifically, but no one ever asked her either.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think so, which is good, yeah. You know, in the sense that that's
and
not top of mind.
Moving forward yeah. In the right direction where it's not necessarily, doesn't need to be a topic that's asked, and that, you know, coming out can be as easy as just answering a simple question. And
mm-hmm.
it's like, oh, okay, that's it. Goodbye.
Cool. Yeah.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah, so her legacy and impact so far, she remains an icon of authenticity.
You got this, girl.
And individuality in the music industry. And she inspires her fans to embrace their true selves and live authentically, regardless of societal expectations. So throughout her life, she and throughout her rise to fame, she's emerged as a really resilient and influential figure. And she's using her platform to advocate for that inclusivity and acceptance as like a broad spectrum. So, yeah, that's the life of Billie Eilish. I didn't go in depth about like her awards and accolades because I feel like I meandered too much. And
well, we've talked about them a lot.
Yeah,
yeah.
I mean, she's come up at least
two or three times. Yeah.
Oh my gosh, are y'all twins?
Maybe.
Oh my goodness. You said
yep.
you wish.
Oh,
cute.
You want to be my brother?
Oh, you're doing the heart sign like an old person.
Chris didn't know about that. I think it's middle fingers.
The middle finger?
And I can't. What are my other fingers supposed
great.
To do? That's what bothers me. Like, what are my other
I'm scared
fingers?
That you're going to teach me that it's a middle finger and that it's wrong.
They're making
the
heart signs.
I'm going to look
really
older.
I don't know.
Just did it. Okay. Anywho, what was Billie Eilish? And so,
where
what did you just talk about for 30 minutes?
I was thinking about the. I feel like she is one of those people that's. Like, almost, like, so unique. Like, it's almost like she never intended to be the level she is now. Like, as influential, as famous. You know, like, because she just won, like, Oscars, like,
she won her second Oscar, yeah, back to back.
And so, I mean, like, that's pretty big for anybody. Other than, like, you know, like, Randy Newman or anything, like... Any humongous
Randy Newman.
Did you catch that?
Well, what the fuck?
Who, well, he's the first person popped to mind.
Who is Randy Newman?
Oh my god.
Go ahead.
Do you really not know?
I don't.
From Toy Story, You Got a Friend in Me?
Nope. Never seen it.
You don't know. You don't know. But
do toys have stories?
It's not a common thing for, you know, like, the. I mean, it. When you think about people winning Oscars for the music, for
no,
it's,
you know,
it's big names like that of like older white men like that do these big like sweeping.
Hans Zimmer,
what's her face?
All right, the planet
exactly, and like what's her face? The other lady.
You don't know who Hans Zimmer is?
Oh, I know who Hans Zimmer is.
Oh, okay,
and I know who he is, but I was gonna say
yeah, but to your point, like Gaga loses twice back to back, and Billie Eilish is like, let me write you a whispery
exactly.
song.
A whispering song.
That song
loses twice back to back. Our
she,
Papa
she,
Joanne.
No, no,
oh.
the Oscars.
The
like
Oscar.
She did.
Oh.
She won a Golden Globe. It wasn't an Oscar.
But no, she
was
did. She did win an Oscar
yeah,
for Shallow.
Yeah. But like this
Gaga.
Barbie song. That's my song for this. That, I think that's how I feel about this year in general. Oh my god. Like
what was I made for?
That's how I went into the scene.
I did not like. Did I
break
turn
the
off.
Internet?
No. Can you still hear it?
I can't
no,
hear
I can't hear anything.
Uh-oh. Oh, there it goes. It's back on.
What
I hope that everyone heard that. It,
I don't know.
That was crazy. That was almost like a power outage, but nothing else
I thought
was
it
off.
Was a power outage.
Well, I think the good Lord was trying to tell us, you're not made for this.
You guys have a,
we
got cut off.
You do not have a voice.
He's another whispering.
You don't even have a,
anyway,
a face for radio.
I like her. I think she's...
Hey, you found your tribe.
As their buddies on the radio.
I'm just so glad you found your tribe.
I feel...
You're such an asshole.
Oh, wait. Oh,
I can do it out that there's traps. Okay, well, somebody out there likes it. Somebody found your tribe.
Hey, you have...
You say your thing.
You have lots of followers. I don't have that
I
many
have
followers.
Lots of followers. And they all seem to very much like my thirst trap. So I'm glad I found my tribe.
Thousands of...
Ooh,
keep dropping things.
I guess I feel I like her, but I'm also looking through the idea. I mean, a little bit older than your girls. Like, Stella is in sixth grade. So, like, this is her, like, little, she's a big, and when it, she's, like, not so much now, like, you know, like, she still likes her, but, like, when she first, she was a huge Billie Eilish fan. And so, like, so it was right at that key demographic of, like, that weird preteen teen. And so, like, I appreciate the fact that she's, like, I don't care so much about, like, the body image, because, I mean, like, that's, I try to promote that with Stella. But, like, the whole, like what you said, the inclusivity, be yourself, like, dress how you want to dress. You know, like, if you're going to show it off, but show it off because you want to do it. Or if you want to hide it, you want to be this hair color. That, you know, so I like that that was more mainstream and done in, like, an I don't care way rather than, like, a shock way.
Yeah.
So I think that's, she seems very authentic, I guess, in her individuality.
Mm-hmm. Not authentic.
It's not about marketing for her. It's about, you know, and it just so happens everybody loves her for being her because...
Yeah, she got talked to a few years ago with the last album where she was talking about being like having a porn addiction, like when she was a teenager, which caught a lot of flack because she was like, I would just watch it. And, but she sings about it, like on her most recent album, she sings about like something to the fact like that's not really how you act, like that's not really how it's done. Like, so basically talking about watching a movie and
the sex in the porn movies is not real.
That's not what happens.
Yeah,
it's not what happens. Yeah,
so
bunnies in the bayou.
You still want to talk about bunnies in the bayou?
I didn't get that there.
Good.
Did you?
I guess.
Are
I
you saying that you
did? I didn't get that there.
Oh.
In public.
I just not in public. Never. Not in public.
You would never. You're.
Well, no. I
there are porta potties.
You're, oh, that's no. That
especially on a day of the Lord.
Doing, I mean, I'm more power to you if you want to go.
I didn't do it.
Not you, but you like generic global you. I just, a porta potty is not my idea of. I'm gonna have to be really three sheets to the wind to get fucked in a porta potty.
Never
that's
in
just
public,
not my
huh?
area.
Okay.
I didn't do it.
But you know what? You know.
Did you do it?
No.
Different strokes.
I didn't do it.
Different pokes for different folks.
Different pokes for different folks.
Well, you know, hey, if you're going to do it on Easter, make sure he's hung.
It, on your knees?
Oh, I get
it. For the man that's hung.
Jenny Fleck.
That's where the lights go out and...
where we get another reckoning.
It's like, boom. Okay, we want to talk about church stuff. We want to go to church? Let's go to church.
Go
okay.
to church, baby. Easter Sunday.
On
church.
April 11th, 2018, the Pope Francis, released a letter was released, one that he wrote just a few days prior to some Chilean church officials saying that he created grave errors. This was a rare admission of hey, like I did this wrong from the Pope and the Catholic Church. So just for background, right? So the big thing is like the Pope said, hey, I committed some grave errors by not believing people that claim to have been abused by church officials. And the reason it's a big deal because he initially said, no, I don't believe these folks. They're basically being slanderous. And so he was visiting. So in this letter came out in April 2018. In January 2018, he was in Chile. He was doing a trip to South America. So Chile and then Pope and then Peru. And so he was asked about a case that had been brewing in Chile for some time. And he was like, well, what do you think about this case? Like this, you know, the one, this priest, but two, like the bishop that was in charge of this diocese there in Chile, like he covered it up. Like he knew what was going on. And you just basically had, you know, are disregarding all the testimony of the survivors. And the Pope would basically said, there's no proof. This is, you know, of this, that this actually happened. He said, the day someone brings me proof against Bishop Barros, then I will talk. But there's not one single piece of evidence, and it is all slander. Is that clear, is what he tells the press who asked
so
the questions.
What he said in 2018?
He said in 2018. Okay. So he releases the, grave errors in April. In January, he apologized for the comments he made in January, which is like, hey, if someone can bring me proof that the bishop knew was in on it and doing a cover-up, then I'll talk. But there's no single piece of evidence that happened. Like, you're being basically slanderous. And so this caused a lot of stir in Chile because they're like, we thought we were all moving forward, because the case in question, this priest that abused these people, had already been resolved. That priest had been found guilty, and I'll get into that bit, but the Chileans were like, we're moving forward with this, you know, recognizing the church has had numerous accounts of abuse in it, that the church leaders haven't always been forthcoming and supportive of the victims, and so we're moving forward. And then the Pope says, basically, you know, I don't believe you guys, and not so much the victims, but more so that there was a cover up, because it's interesting, because the Pope is telling folks, like, he's like, I feel badly for the victims, I feel, you know, great remorse, and, you know, for their suffering, but doesn't want to acknowledge, like, the church did it, per se. Yeah. Doesn't want to be like, doesn't want to point fingers at anyone, doesn't want to point fingers at the priest that did it, and doesn't want to point fingers at the church leaders who basically look the other way.
But still wants to say, oh, I'm so sorry
Yes.
for what you had to do with.
Yes. And so this just ignited a lot of feelings in Chile when he made those comments in January. And then, you know, finally in April, again, there was a bit of like the Pope was like, hey, look, grave errors in my comments. So just background on the case. So four victims and eventually eight victims brought a case against this man named Father Fernando Caradima in 2004, 2005. They said they suffered abuse when they were teenagers, and the abuse lasted for over two decades in some instances. And so one of the victims alleged, like, you know, Father Caradima chose me at when I was age 17, he said, to be part of this Catholic Action Youth Movement that was basically started by Father Caradima. And so he said, kind of immediately, you know, once this victim, his name is Dr. James Hamilton, who's a gastroenterologist.
Mm-hmm.
There we go, vocabulary. Mm-hmm. He said, like, early on, and when he got involved in this Catholic Action Youth Movement, like, Father Caradima started kissing him on the mouth and, like, unwanted, and then touching his genitals unwanted. Oh. And he said, and then on a retreat, you know, a little bit into their relationship, like him being part of this group, it went much further. And, you know, it doesn't say what he did. He just said he went much further, and he was paralyzed. The victim says he was paralyzed, frozen, and I was destroyed. And so he filed a complaint in 2005. And there were complaints against Father Caradima back as early as 2003. An investigation was open, but suspended shortly after it started. Which just kind of gives you a flavor of, like, this. So for context, this priest was known to be, like, this very charismatic, you know, church leader. He mentored a lot of priests in Chile. And he was seen as a spiritual leader. And so people just highly regarded him. They was basically like a modern day saint, is how some folks. So when I say the case was open and then quickly closed, you would imagine, like, there were some hands in the pot. There's some
we're not talking about that.
Eventually the case was reopened in 2009 by the same investigator, and when he reopened it, he said, "Hey, look, church, I know there's a statute of limitations, like, I ask you to reconsider it." When the complaints were filed by these victims, though, in 2004, 2005, and then it started stirring up in 2009, most people were angry at the people that were making the victims making the complaint instead of Father Caradima, because he had just
brainwashing.
Yeah, he just had everyone kind of mesmerized by his charisma.
Uniqueness, nerve, and talent, cunt, baby.
Not in a good way.
No.
So ultimately the investigator gathered lots of testimony from dozens of witnesses who helped establish a pattern of decades of abuse by Father Caradima. But eventually when this case was brought forward, at least in the Chilean government, the case was dismissed for lack of evidence, and they just said, "Hey, look, we don't see it here." And so the victims that brought it forward were initially like, "Hey, this is bullshit." Like, but we know this is a corrupt system in the sense that a lot of people are supporters of Caradima, But hey, if anything, we brought to light that this powerful figure was, you know, abusing folks. So it helped create kind of concern and question amongst folks, and people were questioning the church leadership, and then to some extent the government, because there was like, well, you guys aren't doing anything on this. Eventually, the case though was taken to the Vatican through the church review process, and Father Karadima was convicted by the Vatican in 2011 for abusing the teenage boys. And they kind of noted this big, because there was like a 700-page report with tons of testimony that went to the Vatican saying this has been going on since the 1980s. The church, you know, said guilty, and you are ordered to a life of prayer and penance. So that was the thing. So they removed him from the church he was in. So once the Vatican decided, they immediately told the church officials in Chile. The next day, Father Karadima was reassigned to another location, to another residence. But he wasn't going to be around any of the victims he abused previously or the people he was influencing.
But still allowed to potentially abuse other people.
Yeah. They never defrocked him. They never removed him from the priesthood. So you better not do it again, because, you know, that's wrong. So because he was 80, though, they had decided not to do anything more egregious. They said, just go to a life of prayer and penance. The thing is, he was popular, like I said, trained, you know, five bishops, dozens of priests, a spiritual leader to, you know, dozens of children and other church leaders. But the church folks in Chile, as well as the victims and just the broader Chilean community, were like, okay, this is like the fact that he was found guilty by the Vatican, like, this is a defining moment, because till then, like, nothing was really talked about, especially in a very public form. Everything was kind of done in the dark of night. If a priest was found guilty of doing something, they would just be relocated. So they saw this, like, again, the victims were like, if nothing else, this is a defining moment. And even the church officials, like, we can't hide abuse scandals anymore. Like, we have to make sure that we're looking and evaluating these things very carefully. This case was going to be brought up again, but ultimately it was dismissed, because at least in the Chilean government, the Chilean court system, because it was past the statute of limitations. So he never was convicted of anything, and then went off to go retire. But the victims were like, I can't believe it's like, you know. The testimony's there. It's like as if I could have taken a selfie. One of the victims said a selfie or a picture while Karadima abused me. He's like, going back to like this whole letter that the Pope wrote. He's like, Juan Barros would stood there watching it all. Like, this guy was clearly, these church leaders were clearly involved, and they did nothing. And so for us to go to the Pope and say, hey Pope, like, you've convicted this guy. You should also hold the church leaders that were in charge at the time. And this guy, the bishop Barros, was appointed by Pope Francis. So that's a little bit of the like murkiness, that why maybe the Pope wasn't, you know, looking to, you know, call out someone that he appointed. But the Pope just was maintaining, like, you know, this is all, these folks are accusing this guy and the church leaders insistently without evidence. You know, it's like, if I say you stole something, I'm slandering you because I don't have any evidence. And so that was his position. And then ultimately, the priest was given, or the Pope was given this big report. And, he looked at it more closely, and he was like, oh yeah, okay, maybe there's a story here. That's when he issued this letter to the bishops of the Episcopal Conference of Chile. He said that he looked at a report, and there were 64 of these detailed interviews with 64 people noting that they were affected by the scandal, of not just this one priest but multiple priests in Chile. And the Pope essentially asked for forgiveness with this letter that he published back in April 2018. He said, at this very moment, I ask forgiveness to all those who I have offended, and I hope to personally do this as well as in the next few weeks in the meetings. Like, he wants to apologize. He wanted to apologize to these people in person, and I will, you know, have the representatives of the people, basically all those people that were interviewed, he wanted to talk to them in person. It was a notable change for the Pope and the Church in general, because the Catholic Church, especially at that high level, was not prone to say, yeah, we did something bad, or we acknowledge mm-hmm. that you know, this abuse was going on. You know, but it caused like a lot of stir, because it's like the Pope, like, this priest has been found guilty, and you know, the Pope's just going to say, nope, yeah, you don't have any proof. And so a lot of people got really ticked off about that. But the Catholic Church has been prone to scandal for,
yeah, sure.
You know, over the last 25 years or so, like, it's made a lot of headlines.
Yeah,
I mean,
like, it's been forever.
Yeah, you've got scandals that were back in Australia. You had a very senior cardinal that was accused of sexual abuse and then covering it up. Dominican Republic in 2014, you had a Vatican ambassador to the Dominican Republic who was found guilty of sexual abuse. These are all like senior people in the church hierarchy. The Netherlands, you had another report, like damning report of up to 800 possible perpetrators. This report was released in 2011. It had nearly 2,000 reports of abuse. Same thing in Austria, Germany, the Netherlands, Spain, Switzerland, Brazil, Ireland. It basically, at some point, like in the 90s, it nearly crushed the Irish government, because, like Chile, in Ireland, they were so very Catholic, and like the religion was very much entrenched in the politics of the world. So there was a scandal in the 90s of all this abuse that was being done by the church officials. Well, the church had a hand in childcare in the 90s in Ireland. So when this started to come into head, people were like, "What the like? We are trusting you to take mm-hmm. care of our children, and you're abusing them." So. Needless to say, much like Chile, Ireland kind of backed away from strong, let the church, you know, guide us in our moral compass and how to do things right. Like, they, you know, it used to be a very Catholic and religious nation. Now it's, you know, Ireland could be argued as more secular.
Well, so I don't think that these scandals have just come up out of nowhere in the past 20, 30 years.
No.
I think that these things have always existed. I think that the Catholic Church has been largely founded on abusing little boys, honestly. I think that a lot of these priests and bishops were probably abused when they were boys in the Catholic Church, and then they just continued this never-ending cycle since, you know, Christianity and Catholicism became popular 1,700 years ago. So this is all they've ever known. And so that's why, you know, you hear these stories about other bishops or other people just watching this stuff happen, and there's no evidence, because they're all supporting each other doing this to all of these other people. And it has only recently come out as well, because culture has changed so much. Because, you know, you look back to the 1950s, 1960s, if a man came forward and said, this, you know, man was touching me, is like, first of all, we don't believe you. Second of all, now you're gay.
Yeah.
And so then your entire image is suddenly, you know, defaced, deformed. You are no longer, you are a menace to society now. And so people in the past would have never said anything about these people talking ill. And if you even go back even further to the, you know, 1600s, 1700s, when, you know, poor boys were taken in by the church to, you know, have a better life than being some peasant or, you know, someone living on the street. If they talked ill about the Catholic Church, then it's like, okay, well, they go live on the streets again. So
mm-hmm.
you can go die in a street alley instead. So they were forced into these things. And so now we're at this point in this Me Too movement where people are able to talk about these things and say, no, this was happening to me, and not feel that they have to be like, oh, you're a homosexual now. You know, and even if they were they are homosexual or, you know, whatever they are now, they still can talk about these things, and it's not a bad image anymore.
Yeah.
So I think that these things, that the Catholic Church is largely founded on these things, and the Catholic Church is finally like, oh shit, we're being caught now, so we need to like not do these things anymore, or, you know, find a way to either hide it more or
you can't hide it anymore, because now there's social media. I'm like, hey, dude, like, you can do this. research more easily. I mean, I remember watching. So there was a big scandal in Boston, and the story kind of broke in 2002 in the Boston Globe, but it was talking about scandals from the mid 1980s through the 90s and whatnot. But it became turned into the movie Spotlight, which won a lot of awards. Mark Ruffalo but I remember watching that and just seeing how they were trying to compile the data. They were going to libraries and like pulling it all together, and you know that was sophisticated at the time because they were building a database. But now you don't need to do that anymore because you can go online and figure out like where is this. You get a new priest, you can damn well bet someone's going to go look online.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
Where did this person come from and why did they leave their last parish? And so it's very different because of technology and the way we're all connected, but. I feel like it still happens. Like we're still, and it's not just the Catholic Church, right? There are plenty of religions. I mean, you look at the Baptist Church. There's plenty of stories out there, the Mormon Church as well. So
I think a lot of it also is power.
Mm-hmm.
Like the more powerful religion or organizations get, the more corrupt, you know, because they find themselves above law, but you know. They can't be touched. So I think then depravities come out. People start to get more okay with doing things that they wouldn't normally do if there were people watching them and checking them. So, I mean, but then the Catholic Church globally is hugely powerful.
Mm-hmm.
Like you said with Ireland, like, I mean, influencing entire, like, economies and countries. And that's still the norm in a lot of places. And even... here, and like maybe not our country, but like there are a lot of cities that are still heavily influenced by the church. And I think it's just the downside to, or the plus side, I guess, for some that's coming out. But I mean, for them, it's the downside.
Yeah, it's gross that people you trust and that you think are doing good
mm-hmm.
in your community are taking advantage of
mm-hmm.
children. That's disgusting and shameless. You want to maybe like the compassionate person in me wants to say to your point earlier, like, well, maybe they've been subject to abuse and, you know, you feel for them if that's been the case, but that's like, there's gotta be other ways to kind of get through that. But it doesn't help that the Catholic Church is, you know, holds their priests to being celibate and, you know, if they are gay, you know, taking that part of their brain out of, not literally, but you know, hiding that, right, and
mm-hmm.
praying it away,
mm-hmm.
and so you know, that's you think about why these scandals happen. You know, some folks attribute it to that, but to your point, Chris, like a lot of folks have saying, hey, this has always been the way the Catholic
mm-hmm.
Church has operated, and sure, there are antiquated norms or views in terms of sex and gender and repressing all of that and your sexuality, but it's still prevalent, like it still happens in the church. And again, it's not just the Catholic Church, it's all these different religions, and it's, again, it's so sad because the sense of community, like I know Dusty, you've been involved in church and closely related in those communities, and I have as well. And so just to know, to think about like, oh, wow, that priest could have potentially done that. And I'm going back in my head, and I'm like, how many priests were reassigned and why were they? Because I grew up Catholic, and I'm like, why were they reassigned? Was it really because they were serving the mission of God and on to their next chapter?
Right.
Or was it because
they got caught in a scandal and got moved on?
Which
that's why I think that right now there's also this huge push. Well, not I don't say huge push, a huge, turning of backs away from religion nowadays.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think that it's a generational situation. I think that, you know, 1940s, 1950s parents would just force their kids to be in church. And I think that the 70s and 80s, when those people were growing up, was a lot of where some of these abuse and scandals were really like occurring, and the whisperings and rumblings were coming about. And so those people either didn't make their current kids go to any of these churches or anything like that, or they, you know, went to church, but not like it wasn't, you know, a forced upon thing. And then the generation now, like millennials and younger people, either had parents like mine who were like, we don't go to church because, you know, we didn't like what the church had to say at the time, or, you know, there was abuse at some point. And they were like, we're not taking your kids there because I was abused as a kid and my parents didn't listen to me. And so I'm not going to even attempt to go there. So I think that there's just this wave of people who are just like, I'm not doing the religion thing. Like, it's just not happening. And I, to what you said here, I completely think that religion historically has always been a place for people to find safety, find a sense of community. And so I think that religion can be important in people's lives and be helpful in people's lives. But I think that currently, with the age of social media as well, we have other ways to find community, and religion is not needed anymore.
You found your tribe.
Found my tribe on the internet, baby.
Yeah, I'm torn. I grew up, I won't say grew up in the church. We went to church. I did church activities. I got my first communion. I went to confession. My parents had me going to Sunday school. And then in some periods, I went to like weekday church class. So I kind of always had that in my mind. And then I think, well, when I was my sophomore year of school, I guess now that I look about it, look back at it, I was like, I probably wasn't depressed. So I dropped a couple of classes. I like broke up with my girlfriend at the time, and I was going through some stuff. I found kind of hope, rescue, I don't know, in the church, in the Catholic Church. And so I got very involved in it. And I wouldn't say very involved, but I was like, oh, I need to get my confirmation, which is one of the sacraments in the Catholic Church. And I was all in. Like, I was going to retreats. I was waving my hands in the air, singing songs, so I was church on Sundays, spiritual class on Tuesdays, praying during the week, going to more like church in the mornings or in the afternoon, just trying to figure out. I think I was also like wrestling with maybe what is my sexuality? And so I was like trying to pray that away, maybe like, oh, this is something you could pray away. So I kind of gravitated towards the church. And even after I graduated college, started working, got involved in some salacious acts, I'd go to church and like I'd pray that away. I'm like, well, that was just a one-time thing. I'd go to confession and talk about it. And I went to a church here in Houston, a Catholic church that was on Westheimer, so near the Montrose area. There were lots of, I wouldn't say lots, more gay people at a church than I'd ever seen. They were out. And so I was like, oh, okay, this is okay. But as I heard more about these scandals and thought about my own experience, and then going to a church, because there's still that balance that even at a, I'll call a liberal Catholic church, you still can't get married, even though the Pope has said we'll acknowledge civil unions, but he's still not accepting gay marriage. I'm like, how do you take, as a parent, how do I take my kids there to like, and you know, maybe the anti-LGBTQ people will say, well, that's what they should be learning, that you gays aren't right, right? But I'm like, that's not a, those things don't reconcile for me. Taking my kids to a church, I hope my kids feel like they're in a loving home. Yeah. But then to go into a church every Sunday and hear that,
your loving home is invalid.
Yeah. It's just like, I can't reconcile that. That said, we still pray every night because I think that I want to give them that foundation. Yeah. I don't want to tell them this is how you have to do it. That's for them to figure out, when they get older. But I do feel like there's some, by going to church, I did feel like I did learn some of my morals, my like be a good person, like those are the things I've always taken away. So I don't know, I'm torn because like I said, I feel like I personally growing up as a kid got some good valuable lessons out of it. I may have kissed a girl at a retreat.
Oh my God, scandalous, look at you.
I don't know, what do you, no church for you? If you had kids, no church?
Absolutely not.
You were a church goer,
we were
beating that Bible.
It. I grew up in the church, very into it as but I think the same reason it was ebb and flow based upon like things I felt I had to make up for and hide and question. I struggle. I don't know. Like I struggle to, because I'm like, why would I, why, I guess it's the religion is the problem, not the fae god thing, because like religion is like a human person, man-made thing. And like, why would I want to, like you said, why would I want to go someplace that's going to say you're bad or mm-hmm. tell my kids? And so, but I do the same thing, you know, like my kids were, they were all young when we were, so they have that foundation. They know that. And, but they're not, I mean, for themselves, they're, you know, they don't go to church and, you know, let them be, I think, I don't know. I'm still in a very questiony, not sure way.
I just feel like the fact that religion has maintained itself over all these thousands of years, there's like, I don't know, and maybe I'm taking a leap of faith, that there's something, there's some sort of pull towards that. Like, I don't know what it is. It's not scientific,
yeah,
but
no,
I'm like,
I think
what is the psychology of
a
human?
That, no, I think it's a moral. It's a tie to, I think it's very tied to morality, like right and wrong. You want to be a quote good person. What does good mean? And I think it's like, it also is like a higher belief. Like it's almost like you have to have an answer for things. Sometimes the answer is there's no answer, which was always frustrating for me. Like, why does that just because, you know? And so I think it's because people need something to, not blame, but something to focus on, that like, why is this happening? They need a centering, grounding force.
You're looking at that through a very rose-colored glass. So I will applaud you for that. I think that religion is founded...
Actually, it's rosé.
I think that religion is largely founded on fear. It is fear of the unknown. It is fear of not knowing what happens once we die. It is fear of thinking like that you're just going to turn into dirt in the earth, and the earth is just going to recycle your body. It's fear. People are afraid of what's going to happen, so they have to create this idea that there is going to be this beautiful, elegant afterlife that you can see. And then, of course, it made it even further that you throw in those morals that you said. Okay, well, if you're good and you're doing the good things that we deem as good, then you can go up to this eternal afterlife in heaven and be great. But if you're doing bad and doing the things that we deem that are bad, then you're going to go to hell and you're going to spend eternity doing, you know, whatever awful things that the devil is going to do to you.
And I think
so
it's
fear.
It's fear and answers. Like, I mean, because now we have science. Like, so like you said, people are turning away or are leaving religion or leaving churches because, like, you know, 1,000 years ago, 100 years ago, there weren't, you didn't know the, why does this happen? So either you made up a story or there was
Religion prevented scientific advancement for hundreds of thousands of years.
No, I'm agreeing with you. And that's why, like, now people are, because now there are other things to explain, other things to go to, other things to seek out and further.
Yeah, you're not only
question.
Looking to the church
exactly.
or
There's
your government that's
answer.
Influenced by the church
everything
to give
was
you the
one,
answer.
Everything was one answer. I mean, what? I mean, mission, I mean, that's what you did. You went out, you conquered land was the first thing you did. After you raped and pillaged, you built a church. And so, you know, like, and I think that's no longer the focus because people realize there are things out there, you know. There's something, there's, you know.
Religion prevented science from going on because any time that we would discover something new happened, that person was either murdered or just, you know, hushed and destroyed because they were like, this is witchcraft. God would never allow this to happen. And, yeah, drown the witch. And so... I mean, I said hundreds of thousands of years. Religion is not that old. Tens of thousands of years. And I just wanted to redact my statement, make sure that we were correct in the timing. And so, I don't know.
Yeah.
I, being a very largely not religious person, almost borderline anti-religious person sometimes, I struggle with...
Yeah,
no, I don't want to say struggle. I will happily applaud those that continue their... faith. I, however, will never create space for anyone who is going to use their religion to hate other people.
See, I think that's where your not trouble or problem, your insert adjective.
Happy? No, I'm kidding.
You can have as much faith as you want to in whatever you want to believe. But as soon as you start to hate on another human being
yes.
and that it infringes on someone else's rights, you have completely lost
me. Your
and you are a shit human being. You are a shit person. You are not welcome in my life. You're not welcome to speak to me. You're not welcome to look at me. Do not even look in my direction.
Unless you like my
energy. I cannot.
See, when I think when your way of belief, when the advancement of your thoughts has to rely on, this is even with politics, has to rely on the tearing down of or the diminishing of someone else
mm-hmm.
for whatever reason, then that's the problem. Like, you should be able to stand on your own. You should be able to be happy. You shouldn't have to do that because of some, you know, you shouldn't have to be made to look better because somebody else has
mm-hmm.
to look worse.
Yes. That's what I said. Faith is fine by me. You can have faith in whatever you want to believe.
You gotta have faith.
Organized religion, I believe, is a plague on this planet. Can I say it any darker?
No, no. That's my second deep dive song.
I think it has been a destructive factor to humanity for thousands of years. I think that organized religion is trash.
You got to take on what's going on in Israel and Gaza. No, I'm kidding.
Does he?
And,
since you asked.
Let's go ahead and
talk we're talking about how
Zionism
our religion is doing. No. On that note, you know, if you want to believe in the power, you can believe in the power of economy works because economy works believes in the power of connection and wants to connect you with its talent network. The talent network has over 1,000 years of experience and it's growing in HR, marketing, IT, accounting, and other specialties. Hire a freelancer through economy works. Economy works when we work, the economy
works.
You can find out more at economyworks.com. That's economyworks.com. Someone told me the other day, you know, normally people are like, Barry, oh, we love your podcast. I'm like, thank you so much for listening, Mom. someone told me the other day that, like, do you ever get to the point? He's like, I listen sometimes. And then it's just like, y'all just yap and yap and yap.
Yes,
well,
we do, babe.
We're going to wrap this up in 90 minutes today. So,
90 minutes?
Oh, my gosh.
Look at
that.
Look
can
at
you
that.
Next episode will be 3 hours.
So we wrapped it up for you.
We just yap and yap and yap. And
Chris,
we start arguing and talking about the exact same. We start arguing when we're agreeing about the same thing. Anyways.
Well, we're going to wrap it up on like what Chris did during the bunnies on the bayou event.
Which
is why he's got an itchy throat.
I didn't do it.
And that's all I got to say. Thanks for joining us and keeping us with us this week. A special thank you to the man who keeps our sound in check and keeps me in check in my daily life, Spencer. And with that, we're here.
We're queer.
Get used to it.